in Brazil to agree a strategy to prevent its destruction. Scientists say protecting the rainforest is crucial for wider efforts to tackle increased greenhouse gas emissions, and if current levels of destruction continue, the damage will be irreversible. It emerged that hackers may have accessed the details of tens of millions of voters in the UK. The US Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, has warned the leaders of a coup in Niger not to join forces with the Russian Wagner mercenary group. Pakistan's former Prime Minister Imran Khan has been disqualified from politics for 5 years, days after receiving a prison sentence for corruption. And thousands of people have gathered on the streets of County Wicklow to pay their respects before the funeral of the singer Sinead O'Connor. BBC News.
And the news was read by Vicky Alice. We head to Newcastle for the world's most devious game of Would You Rather with Steph McGovern next and The Ultimate Choice. 6:30 comedy after news of a thriller coming up this Friday.
New drama from Radio 4.
There is something you can do for me.
Approached by a stranger.
I want you to hold something for me.
Hold something.
And offered 10 grand.
Just between us, my friend. Tell nobody.
Would you take it?
What have I got to lose?
Right?
A new global thriller.
Do you often do this?
Do you what?
Threaten people?
Espionage, money, and murder.
I work for the good guys.
The good guys?
It'll save a lot of lives if you help us.
There's something I need to tell you. Starts on Friday afternoon at 2:15 on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
6:30 comedy now on Radio 4 as Steph McGovern presents us with more devious conundrums.
McGovern, and welcome to The Ultimate Choice, the show that confronts celebrities with some seriously dastardly dilemmas. It's a game of Would You Rather, souped up like never before. And joining me this week are two top comedians. It's Josie Long and Scott Bennett! Hello, welcome to the show. I'm going to present each of our guests with a devious scenario that rests on one simple choice. But Josie and Scott won't be the ones calling the shots, oh no. Our sage and sassy studio audience are here to weigh the evidence and, with some help from real-life experts, cast the ultimate decision on our poor celebrities' fates. And this episode is coming to you from the wonderful city of Newcastle! Let's get cracking with round one. Scott, it's your future on the line. You're a manager at a medium-sized accountancy firm in Hereford. Business is tough and things are made even worse when your best employee is poached by a rival. You need to find fresh blood, an apprentice who'll thrive at all aspects of the job, dealing with clients, crunching numbers and growing the business. Only two candidates apply for the role. You have to take one of them. Willy Wonka or the Terminator? Which do you choose?
I think Willy Wonka, I do worry about his ethics. Because on the one hand, he employed the Oompa Loompas, didn't he? So he's an equal opportunities guy. Right, but then the other hand, if he's turning the receptionist into a blueberry, it's just psychotic, isn't it? Yeah. Even Jeff Bezos wouldn't do that. But I think the Terminator, the reason I'm not sort of erring on the side of the Terminator is I don't know if he's going to stay in the accountancy business, because I think he's a bit overqualified, because he can't be bargained with, he can't be reasoned with, he doesn't feel pity. He'd be better off in politics, really.
What are your first thoughts, Josie?
My first thoughts would be, when I'm looking at the Terminator as a candidate, my first question would be, where is your relevant experience? Mm. You know? Sure, he time travels. Sure, he's indestructible. There's gaps in his CV because he's off back three times.
Yes.
You can't justify that in a job interview. No one's going to believe you. Like, where were you between 1996 and 2000? 1984.
Yeah. There is lying on your CV and then there's taking the mickey.
Yeah, exactly. And what I'd also say is, like, for me, Willy Wonka, he has run a successful business for a long time. He knows what he's doing.
But that...
Yeah, I agree. I think his techniques would not suit an accountancy firm. I don't want, like, Oompa Loompa, doobly dat, you are 6 months behind with your VAT. You know what I mean?
I think you said he's good with business, but I do worry about his acumen, that if you actually think about it, he built up that business from scratch, mm-hmm. the previous business, mm-hmm. and then just gave it away to a child he'd never met.
Yeah, well, that shows philanthropy, which is good, and I think he would give accountancy a good reputation, won't he?
Possibly. I think as well, though, I've met accountants, and this is like Willy Wonka's thing, was he was going to take you into a world of pure imagination. And let's face it, accountants don't do that, do they? So they think musical ties is pushing the boundaries.
He'd also bring treats to work, though. That'd be good, wouldn't it?
For your birthday.
You know what? Yes. Business, like, this is what I think. I think this man will revolutionise what it is possible to claim as a business expense. Chocolate River. Yes, business expense. Elevator that goes to space for no reason. Business expense.
Do you worry about, like, the Oompa Loompa side of this, though, you know, because he's... I imagine...
What, as in what's happened to him?
Yeah.
They all work in Amazon, don't they, now? he's got him in there, hasn't he? Just, but only, like, low-level, doing the, like, low-level stuff. Going in down ladders all day, you know.
Should we talk about Terminator pros, then? What are we thinking there? Low maintenance?
Low maintenance. Do you know what else I'm thinking? And this might only fly with other people who are self-employed. It is always really stressful because you pay half your tax in advance, and when you're doing your taxes, you're thinking about the previous year. Mm. This is a man who loves to travel back and forth through time. This is a man born for accountancy in that regard.
I think it'll be great until you employ someone called Sarah Connor.
So he might take commands too literally. Like, if you say, oh, you know, I want to blow our competitors out of the water.
Yeah. Oh, his little eyes would light up.
Finally, something I'm good at. That's the thing, though. He'd be wiping out your clients for something they're going to do in 20 years.
In 2037, you claim for a ginsters. You are outside the 5 mile radius of your place of work.
Think on this.
Hello. I think Willy Wonka's better because he's just more positive, and you've got to think about not just him but how he'll fit in with the whole workforce, you know, and I think he'll just, like, brighten up people's days, and obviously he's got the business experience. But yeah, if Terminator came in the office, I might hide.
Although they've said, haven't they, that bringing in sweet treats to work is like passive smoking now.
Yeah.
Haven't they said it's what leads to obesity? So maybe Willy Wonka's going to kill us all.
Yeah. You get diabetes, won't you, sitting next to him all day. Well,
yeah.
It's like if you work in an office, when it's your birthday, you've got to bring in cakes. I don't know why that's a thing. But you bring in cakes. And I remember when I worked in an office, someone brought in a fruit platter. Ooh. And, yeah, look at the tension. They brought in this fruit platter, no one ever spoke to him again. They were taking fivers out the card.
Anybody else want to tell us whether they prefer Willy Wonka or the Terminator?
I don't know if it's something we should be deciding. It sounds like a perfect thing for Lord Sugar on The Apprentice. I don't know about you, but I would love the chance to see Willy Wonka go head-to-head with Arnold Schwarzenegger on The Apprentice and see what Karen and Claude think. That just sounds amazing to me.
I am not fired. You are fired. Yeah. I can't do it.
And then literally make a shot.
Yeah, yeah.
Just before our audience brings down their gavel, let's hear what an expert has to say. Steve Sully is a regional director for global recruitment organisation Robert Half, and he had this to say.
Two very credible candidates. I think Willie has certainly proved his entrepreneurial credentials within the chocolate world. He's had to be constantly creative and coming up with new ideas, so I would definitely consider Willie to be open to learning and developing new skills. If anything, rather, you'd need to reel Willy in and protect him from himself. So given how much we know about burnout these days, I think we need to ensure that he had work-life harmony. The Terminator is clearly very driven. I've no doubt he would pick off tasks for fun and get the job done. I would be slightly nervous in comparison to Willy about his lack of empathy and whether in him succeeding in the task, whether it would feel like a win for everyone in the organisation. I think he's been a bit of a bad guy, but also been a bit of a good guy. So that would lead me to believe that there's enough there to work with to be able to coach and develop the Terminator. But I think even more important than getting the job done is someone that would fit with the culture, would want to be a team player and really want everyone to feel like they'd won when something went well. So on that basis, I would probably hire Willy.
Has he changed your opinion?
Well, I don't know. I think we're in a world now where AI is a thing, isn't it? So if we don't work with the machines, then I think they will take us over. So I think it's a preventative thing. It's an olive branch, isn't it? If we employ a Terminator in an accountancy firm, it's a step in the right direction to stop us being taken over by killer robots in the future.
I'm going to stop you there and say, as far as I remember the plot of The Terminator, that's the worst thing you could do.
No, not in Terminator 2, mate. He's a chaperone, wasn't he?
Oh.
Yeah, so it shows you, doesn't it? Show him a bit of humility, he'll be rehabilitated. Willy Wonka murders children, give him a promotion. No. Double standards, isn't it?
Right.
Terminator never killed anyone below the age of 30.
Yeah, OK, I take your point.
No, but that didn't come up at the interview. Come on. What did you do in your previous job? I had a chocolate factory. What happened to the children? You just asked that question. That is the one question, isn't it? What happened to the German boy, mate?
It is now crunch time. Studio audience, it's up to you to decide Scott's fate. If you think Willy Wonka would be a better apprentice, give us a cheer now. If you think the best way to improve his office is to hire the Terminator, make some noise! I think that is the Terminator. Are you happy with that choice then?
I really am happy with that. I think it's the right decision. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't work there. It'd be terrifying.
There we are. Scott is destined to spend his days hot desking with the Terminator. But at least you know when he goes for his lunch, he'll be back. Okie dokie, it's time for round two. Josie, here's your scenario. You're contacted by a top secret government agency who explain that the world is under imminent threat from an evil supervillain. It turns out you are a unique genetic match for the superhero creation program. You'll be exposed to a radiation-enhanced animal and will take on all of its unique powers and characteristics. The bad news, the boffin's equipment only works on two animals. So who are you going to become? Eel Girl or the Incredible Moth? Okay, so does either one of them strike you immediately as being preferable?
The first question is the villain a light bulb? Because if so, I've got a very clear stand ahead winner.
Yeah. What are you thinking on this?
Well, the eels are covered in mucus, apparently. I've heard this. No, and that is a strength.
Do you know what? It doesn't feel like a strength.
Have you ever seen a kid in soft play with a runny nose, mate? They may as well have had anthrax in the dungarees. That is a secret weapon, Josie, that is. Mucus. I'm angling towards the eel, mate.
I feel as well like the moth, there is one big pro. And that is all the dust.
Yeah.
You know? Firstly, how glamorous. You've got your own saying built in. Oh, yeah? Eat my dust.
Yeah.
You won't see me for dust. Like, you can already feel the mythology, the mothology. How dare you?
I think the downside to a moth is it's a lot of shift work, isn't it? like night shifts. My dad was always shattered, you know. And then you're not, like you said, you're not going to come alive until someone turns a light on, which in this current climate ain't happening, is it? And also, I don't think they live very long, moths, do they?
No.
So you wouldn't need a pension, another advantage.
Should we see what our audience think on this as well?
Well, I've been to the Amazon before, and I know you can actually get some absolutely gorgeous moths, so you could have a lovely costume, and they can be quite large as well. I think there's some as big as me.
But what I would like to say, this is radio, and that woman is only 3 inches tall.
Anybody else got any thoughts on being a moth or an eel?
An eel is reminiscent of Ursula in The Little Mermaid, and so they're nasty.
I did play Ursula in our school play of The Little Mermaid and quite enjoyed it, so...
Did you?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you have your own songs?
The baddie.
Really?
Yeah.
They've just had bad PR of eels, haven't they? Do you know what, in the Thames, they said that they're full of cocaine because of what's gone through the water system. So, can you imagine that? First thing you got to do is sort out your drug problem.
Yes.
You don't want to charged up, unfocused all day.
Or the eel's just telling you really intensely about how it's going to set up a business.
We'll get the villain, but Bitcoin, mate, Bitcoin!
Anybody else?
I can see how both are quite appealing, but I think the unpredictability of the moth, because they're just fluttery, flappy little feckers, aren't they? They're just all over the place, and you never know where they're going to come from. So I think the unpredictability vibe, go for the moth.
That's a good point, isn't it? You could be really unpredictable.
Yeah, mysterious. Am I here? Am I there? No, I'm by the lamp.
Anybody else? Yeah.
Hiya. I think recently the eel has got a lot of good publicity. Can you remember the one in Hastings the other week where the floods happened and the eel went down the high street? I think I could be very careless.
Is this a cocaine eel or an
eel? On the radio.
Went down the high street, got herself three identical pairs of trainers, didn't know why.
Anybody else got any burning thoughts on this?
So it was sold as eel girl. I was just wondering what percentage eel, what percentage girl?
Why are you asking that?
This is where you got the chance to do a reverse mermaid.
Yes.
Top half eel, bottom half girl.
And at this point, I'm going to move things on. Shall we hear from an expert? Jules Howard is our ultimate choice resident zoologist. This is what he thinks.
OK, we'll start with the incredible moth. There are some species of moth that can fly 2 kilometres into Earth's atmosphere, so that's definitely amazing, brilliant. Skills-wise as well, of course, you've got mind-altering brain chemicals. You know, they send these molecules of pheromones into the air and they can sort of read these from miles away and home in on stuff, so good superhero trick. Bats hunt them at night using echolocation. But there's even a sort of special superhero talent that some moths have where they can actually jam the sonar of the bats. The downside is that noise is made by rapidly vibrating their genitals. It's a kind of cool talent if you want to scare off, you know, your mortal enemy. Eel girl, very athletic, so there is a species of New Zealand eel that can climb 65 feet up waterfalls. Really good sense of direction. You've got this inbuilt magnetic detection system. And also the power of electricity. So they're not true eels, but South American electric eels can control their prey using electricity to sort of make them swim really slowly. Being a moth superhero is going to be great, but it's quite a short-lived experience. So you might have, if you're really lucky, you know, 14 days as an adult. And in that period, whilst fighting crime, you'll also be super obsessed with sex. Eels, some eel species live more than 40 years. It's highly likely that some of them can live 100 or more years as well. And I suppose overall, you're going to be able to make the world a better place for longer if you're eel girl. Mm.
What do we think of this then? Is the thought of shaking your genitals for
the
14
best fortnight of your life? I mean, 14 days is, even if they were 14 pleasure-filled days, it doesn't feel long enough. So I think I would be erring towards the eel, even though they're terrible. The idea of swimming fast up a waterfall at 100, pretty cool. Fair play to eels.
Has Jules changed your mind, Scott?
Yeah, I think the only thing with the moth is, you said they only have sex in the last bit of their life, do they? Is
no, they right? constantly have sex.
Constantly have
for
sex.
For 14 days,
that does
yeah.
change things, actually. For 14 days. The only reason is because I never had a lad's holiday. To Magaluf or anything. I was too scared.
Right, it's time to dish out Josie's fate. Studio audience, if you want Josie to save the world as Eel Girl, cheer now. Yay! Wow. If you think she should become the Incredible Moth, make yourselves heard. Yay! I mean, that sounded the same to me.
What if it's Rogue, eel on top, moth on the bottom?
We're going Eel Girl. Yay! Are you happy with the outcome?
I am. I went into this hating eels and I've come out of it with a newfound respect for them.
So, Josie is going to become Eel Girl and will soon be battling to save the world from her mortal enemy, the Hungry Cockney. And that's the end of round two! Okay. Now, up to this point, our studio audience have been the ones wearing the trousers, and now else as well, because we are in Newcastle. But for our next round, we're handing them over to our panel. Josie and Scott, you're now in command for our audience's destiny. OK, folks, adopt the brace position. Here comes our third scenario. You've just retired. You decide to fulfil a lifelong dream. A month-long luxury cruise around the world. But the day before you're meant to travel, the travel agent calls with bad news. The cruise company's gone bust, leaving you without a holiday or a refund. However, all is not lost. Two other cruise options are available, offering you that chance to finally see the world. And the vessels in question? An 18th century pirate ship or a Hindu party boat. So you're stuck with a load of pirates or a load of lasses on a Hindu. Two very different options with one thing in common, STDs. So, Josie and Scott, which vessel will set sail with our audience on board?
I mean, for me, this is an absolute no-brainer. One of them is absolute hell. And obviously that's the hen party. For me, the pirate ship, like, we're going to the Caribbean and we're gonna find treasure. Like, what a thrill. Where are the downsides? Yeah. For me, hen party, that's my idea of hell because I'm awkward, I'm bookish. I remember my sister's been married twice. I don't know whether she wants this. I don't know whether she wants everyone knowing that. First time she got married, she had a hen party and we went to this nightclub and I was 19, very awkward, and I was wearing my jeans and trainers because that's the kind of cool girl I am. And they were like, no jeans, no trainers. I had to go home, back to a hotel, change into some spare clothes belonging to girls half my size, including flip-flops. I only went halfway up my feet. And so I'd toddle back and try and get back in.
They sound really mean.
But it was the bouncers.
Oh, right.
So what I'm saying is I have no traumatic memories about 18th century pirates.
Yeah, it sounds like this question is probably quite triggering for you, though.
And there's only so many times that you can say, it's your day, Helen.
Yeah.
Are you kind of as decisive as that about it?
Yeah, I've got some thoughts. I mean, you can reason with a pirate.
Can you?
The other thing, I'll tell you the one advantage for the hen night, right? It's the fact that I think there's a little bit of a fun element, because if the ship did go down for whatever reason, what better way to save yourself than clutching onto an inflatable willy? Just imagine just loads of people just bobbing on a big inflatable penis. I mean, that is the ending to Titanic everyone wanted. I'll tell you...
A
I think the 18th century pirate ship would be visually more interesting. Mm.
But you're on the run from the authorities.
Do you know what? It's the 18th century, 1789, French Revolution. Bit of fun.
I mean, you're going to probably get some type of horrible disease, though, as well, and the food will
as
be awful.
As if you wouldn't get both of those on the hen do, let's be real.
There's going to be rats, rotting wood.
Again, these are things I've seen on hen do's.
No, but you're not going to be able to sit and enjoy your, like, Jackie Collins book, are you? Because there's going to be, like, loads of murder and theft and everything else going on around you.
But do you know what? A lot of the time when people, you know, they've done an exciting job, they retire, and then they often might die quite quickly. Because they're bored. I'm saying it's a phenomenon that if you retire, sometimes people get bored and they don't have it. So what better thing to do in retirement than plunder? Well, you know, sail the sea. But you want an exciting retirement.
Do you know what the really worrying thing there, though, is? If you're that clientele, so you're retired, you own your own home, yeah, right? You've got pensions, you've got savings. Yeah. They're looking for treasure. You are the treasure.
Right, let's see what our audience think on this, then.
I think a Geordie audience would love to be on the pirate ship because it would be Aritman.
Is that you've had that joke for like a decade and he's never had a chance. Everything's converged and he's gone, tonight's the night.
Right. Scott and Josie look to me like they're itching to bring down the gavel and serve judgment. But it would be foolish, of course, to make this decision without the help of an ultimate choice expert.
Oh, yes.
Who in this case is cruise director Andy Sanders, who's speaking to us from on board a cruise ship off the coast of Papua New Guinea. Lucky bastard. Here's his view.
Both bring their unique challenges. For example, one will be full of drunken, rowdy people looking for a fight, hands everywhere, and the other one manned by pirates. I think the saving grace would be with the pirates, they drink, get rowdy, and then there's a point where they hit their ceiling, as it were, and tend to calm down, fall into that drunken stupor and become very, very lovely. However, in my experience, hens don't seem to have that ceiling. They'll drink. Then they may drink a little bit more, and then, hands become very handsy, and no man is off limits, as it were. So if I was in your position and I was forced to make the decision, my leaning would be definitely the pirate ship.
Andy's bumped into a few Hindus in his time, hasn't he? Right, it's time for your decision, guys. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I would rather walk the plank.
Yeah, I'd rather have pirates. Yeah. In that audience, you know.
So just like that, our celebrity guests have sealed your fate. If you're thrilled with your lot, give us a cheer. If you're absolutely raging, kick off now. Okie dokie, our audience are off to sail the seven seas in an 18th century pirate ship where they could be crossing swords with the most fearsome creatures ever to take to the ocean. Blackbeard, Calico Jack and Jane MacDonald. So, that brings us to the end of the show. And where are we now? Josie is Eel Girl and just had a run-in with Octopus about all that electricity she's been using. Scott? Scott is regretting his decision to accuse the Terminator of pinching his oat milk. And our audience are taking to the high seas on a pirate cruise, assuming that the pirates aren't on strike that week. Thank you once again to our panellists, Josie Long and Scott Bennett. I've been Steph McGovern and this has been The Ultimate Choice. Good night. The Ultimate Choice was presented by Steph McGovern with guests Josie Long and Scott Bennett. It was written and devised by John Harvey and Joseph Morpurgo, with additional material from Laura Major. The producer was John Harvey, and it's a Naked production for BBC Radio 4.
And Steph will be back with more mind-mangling decisions at the same time next week. With the re-release of the martial arts film Enter the Dragon on its 50th anniversary, actor and filmmaker Daniel York Lowe and Bruce Lee's biographer Matthew Polly discuss the star of the film, Bruce Lee, and his continuing influence across culture. That's in Front Row at 7:15. And before that, George surprises everyone when we're off to Ambridge after the news and after a word from Kirsty Walk.
For 20 years, the reunion has been bringing together key players from moments of modern history.
There was a big clash between these two different ways of being.
Now, for the very first time, every episode is restored and available on BBC Sounds.
I mean, I took my blindfold off. I was in a tiled cell. Then I knew the game was up.
We also return for a new series, reuniting the Spitting Image team, the people caught up in the Lockerbie bombing. And we begin with Jerry Springer, the opera.
What they were confronted with was a rather thoughtful piece that celebrated human nature.
The reunion with me, Kirsty Walk, starts on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds next Sunday morning at 11:15.
BBC News at 7 o'clock. The UK's elections watchdog has warned voters to look out for unauthorised use of their data after revealing that it's been the victim of a complex cyber attack. The head of the Electoral Commission said unidentified hostile actors had managed to gain access to copies of the electoral registers from August 2021, but insisted no votes had been affected. A former director of the GCHQ intelligence agency, Sir David Ormond, told the PM programme he believed Russia was probably to blame for the cyber attack.
We don't know for certain, so you've got to be very careful about attribution. But I mention Russia deliberately because of the past record of both the Russian military intelligence, the GU or GRU, and civilian agency, the SVR, in interfering with Western elections. So they would be first on my list of